It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The ACLU is calling on 8 cities and towns around Wisconsin to repeal their anti-panhandling laws after a 2015 Supreme Court decision ruled that they were unconstitutional. The organization sent letters to the leaders of Altoona, Glendale, Macon, Racine, Superior, Shorewood, Waukesha, and Wauwatosa. 25 local panhandling ordinances have been ruled unconstitutional since the Supreme Court ruled in Reed versus the town of Gilbert. And according to the ACLU, 31 municipalities have voluntarily rescinded their anti-panhandling laws. Our guests for this half hour are the people who sent those letters. Chris Ott is the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Carrie.
We're also talking to Karen Rotker, a senior staff attorney for the ACLU of Wisconsin. Karen, welcome yourself.
Good morning.
So, Chris, these letters seek to repeal panhandling ordinances around Wisconsin. This is not just a state thing. This is part of a national campaign. Tell me about this.
Right. This is something that's been playing out across the country, as well as here in Wisconsin. And it's not just a big city issue either. Incidentally, we can talk a little bit more about that. But the bottom line for us and for the other, for other people who have been looking into this issue is that people who ask for donations for themselves deserve the same protections under the First Amendment as someone asking others to donate to a charity, for example.
How many states are you involved in talking to cities and towns about their panhandling laws?
Karen, do you happen to know that? I don't know the number.
So there are at least, this is part of a sort of national campaign. It's also, if folks are interested, it's housingnothandcuffs.org. But there are about a dozen states participating in this particular campaign. We know the problem of these panhandling ordinances is even broader than that, but about that many folks, and I think it's maybe 50 cities, maybe more, came together to, make this point in a collective way on a specific day that the criminalization of poverty in this way and the criminalization of poor people is not the way to resolve these situations.
So what did the Supreme Court actually decide on these bans, Karen?
So Reed versus Gilbert actually involved certain kinds of signage speech, but it found that if a municipality or a community regulates the content of speech, says you can't talk about a particular topic, that is itself a kind of discrimination and unconstitutional under the First Amendment. Right after that, there was a case from the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals against the city of Springfield, Illinois, that confirmed that applied to panhandling ordinances. And what it said is you can't target speech because you don't like the topic discussed or the message expressed. So I think it's easier if I give you an example. If two people were walking down the street and someone said, I want to raise money for a charity. Can you give me $500 or $1,000 to feed the homeless?
Mm-hmm.
That would have been permissible under any of these, quote, anti-panhandling ordinances, unquote. But if a person sat on the street and said, can you give me $2 to feed myself, that would have been a criminal violation or at least a municipal violation. And what the City of Springfield case and all the other cases have held is that is a form of discrimination under the First Amendment that you cannot have. And I think when I lay it out that way, it makes clear why that's discriminating against certain kinds of speakers.
That does make sense. We're talking about a call by the ACLU for cities and towns to repeal anti-panhandling laws, which Karen Rotker just explained are unconstitutional and were ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court in 2015. Do you support ordinances restricting or banning panhandling? What do you think they infringe on people's rights? What do you think we should do to help homeless populations? 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Karen, I'm going to follow this with you a little bit here. There have been, is it unanimous? Are the courts unanimous on this, that these laws are discriminatory? And what is the limit of discrimination? If somebody is playing guitar, and I have seen homeless people out there playing guitar and asking for money, is that also covered by these ordinances?
So the ones we've seen, I haven't seen litigation under that specific, you know, under the issue of playing music. The litigation that's come after 2015, after the Reed case, and the full Seventh Circuit case, by the way, is Norton versus City of Springfield. Anyway, all of those have addressed various kinds of anti-panhandling ordinances. Some said you could be ticketed just for asking. Some said if it was aggressive behavior, usually very vaguely defined, you could be ticketed for that. Some said if it was in certain locations, and some you could be ticketed for that. All of those are the kinds of things still on the books in Wisconsin. And everywhere in the country that those have been challenged in federal court since 2015, they've been found unconstitutional. So we that's kind of the issue we're looking at. I think playing guitar, especially if someone had a donation box or something like that, probably would be difficult to, I mean, would probably constitute a form of speech, but we haven't gotten to the point of addressing that issue because, frankly, the ones on the books that we're seeing are just flatly banning panhandling or banning it, flatly banning it in specific circumstances.
Interesting. We are talking about panhandling and the unconstitutionality of laws that ban it. Chris, the ACLU of Wisconsin sent letters to 8 municipalities. Have you heard back from them?
Well, we just sent the letters on Tuesday, I believe it was.
So oh, okay.
I don't think we've gotten a response yet.
And so talk to me about the reasons that anti-panhandling laws don't work. I mean, you know, we know legally, but in terms of like humanity, in terms of fixing the problem, why don't these laws work?
Well, I'm glad that I wanted to talk about the humanity involved in this. And, you know, one thing that comes to mind for me is that the First Amendment doesn't guarantee that people won't ever hear speech that they don't want to or that makes them uncomfortable. And if panhandling makes some people uncomfortable, it's not for us to say how people should respond to that. But some people do take this as a call to do things that reduce or eliminate conditions that make people poor in the first place. So I think that needs to be a part of this discussion.
And what can we do to eliminate? I mean, what you're saying is that we just want to eliminate seeing the problem. Some people just want to eliminate seeing the problem, not fixing the problem. But what can we do to fix the problem?
Well, the campaign that Karen mentioned earlier, Housing Not Handcuffs, has good ideas, and I'm sure there are other organizations that have worthy ideas as well. You know, we're not saying that we have all the answers, but we are saying that it's wrong to try to criminalize poverty.
Well, and it's also, you know, to ensure the focus of the campaign is also saying we need to try and find more ways to provide affordable, safe, and decent housing for people who need it and ensure people, you know, have services and the ability to eat and so on, so that they're not put in this situation where they have no choice. And I really liked your framing, by the way, of saying some people just don't want to see the problem rather than trying to fix it, because I think that's exactly right. And we want the discussions to involve trying to fix the underlying issues that cause people to end up panhandling.
Okay, so we're going to explore those underlying issues a little more in a moment. We are talking about the constitutionality, or lack thereof, of anti-panhandling laws and what cities and towns can do to address their homeless populations. We're talking with Chris Ott and Karen Rotker, both of the ACLU of Wisconsin. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Thank you. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The Supreme Court ruled in 2015 that it was an infringement of free speech to ban panhandling. The ACLU is launching a state-by-state effort to get rid of panhandling laws in cities and towns. The organization has sent letters to 8 towns in Wisconsin apprising them of the Supreme Court ruling and asking them to take their panhandling laws off the books. Have you ever had to panhandle to get the money you needed? What was the experience like? How did people you asked for money treat you? Did you interact at all with law enforcement? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We are talking to Chris Ott and Karen Rotker, both from the ACLU of Wisconsin, which sent those letters. Karen, we ended the last segment talking about fixing the problem, not just trying to paper over the problem. What do cities and towns and states and I guess the federal government need to do that we're not doing now to help people from becoming homeless?
So, again, this is, you know, I want to be clear that we're not like the sort of housing policy experts, but we have a lot of thoughts. And, of course, there are a lot of smart people out there working on this issue. But first of all, by stopping criminalizing homelessness and criminalizing poor people, which if you think about it, it's kind of silly. You're going to ticket people and make them pay fines for panhandling. These are not people who are going to afford to pay fines. I mean, it doesn't even make any sense. But also to make it harder to evict people without good cause, to increase services, to increase the supply of affordable housing. And there are a long list on this Housing Not Handcuffs webpage of different ways that that could be done, from using surplus property to build affordable housing, to different kinds of zoning rules, to again to providing counsel for people in eviction proceedings. And there's a much longer list than that.
So,
but I think that the focus is we need to attack the underlying problems that are causing people to be poor and homeless, not attack the poor and homeless people.
We are talking about homelessness and panhandling, and we're taking your calls. Jeremy from Racine, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two concerns. One, I don't want to see these people being criminalized and put in jail or things like that. Definitely in agreement with trying to fix the homeless thing. But there's two concerns I have. If you've ever dealt with panhandling on a large scale, like in Chicago, the folks will walk in between the vehicles at interstate, off-ramps, on-ramps, heavily congested areas where it becomes a danger because they're walking in between the vehicles on the road itself with the cops and going car to car. So there's a safety aspect that has to be addressed with it. And from another aspect of a small business owner who opens up a new business along a strip mall with a high level of people patroning their stores, if you get a large amount of panhandlers in front of your store constantly, it's going to deter customers from going to your store because they don't want to deal with that. So how do you address those issues as well?
Good question, Jeremy. I can also attest that that at intersections, people will walk between the cars asking for money, and I've often wondered for their safety. So how do we regulate that, Chris?
Well, you know, one thing that this reminds me of is that people often also ask the question about what do we do with people who are threatening or aggressive when they're asking for money. And I think the answer to this and to the traffic question that Jeremy asked is that we already have laws against things like disorderly conduct. I suspect that that is the case for traffic traffic laws, too. And we just can't impose additional penalties just for people who panhandle.
And Karen, what do you say about people who say, look, people are in front of my business and they're deterring my customers from coming in? What do you say to that?
So, again, I think if people are genuinely, like, assaulting customers or violating, you know, as Chris said, engaging in disorderly conduct or public intoxication or things like that, there are already laws on the books, irrespective of whether people are asking for money or whatever else they're doing that could be used. You don't need additional panhandling-related penalties. And that goes for traffic ordinances, too. You can say that people shouldn't be walking among cars on the streets, on highways, or something like that, regardless of whether they're asking for money or not. In terms of the business, unfortunately or fortunately, part of free speech is people do have the right to speak even things that other people might not want to hear. And again, if there is some other law they're violating, that's one thing, but you can't say we're just going to go after these specific people who are asking people for money, because that is targeting those specific people based on their speech.
Chris, one of the things you said when we first started talking is this doesn't just happen in big cities. Talk to me about that. Most of the towns that you sent letters to are smaller or mid-sized towns.
Well, right. And the research behind this campaign shows that the some of these ordinances against panhandlers and, of course, the problem of homelessness itself is not unique to bigger cities. This occurs around the state, here in Wisconsin, in big cities and suburbs and in smaller communities. So that is what lies behind this list of eight communities that we sent our letters to the other day.
And how big are the homeless populations in kind of smaller towns? I mean, when I think of homeless, and when lots of people think of homeless, we think of Chicago. We think of Milwaukee. We think of Madison. I see them here in Madison all the time, actually, and worry about them because it's going to get cold pretty soon. And I want to do a story on that. But how big are the populations there, and what can the towns do to help them?
So one of the things that we did along with this campaign was send open records letters to try and find not specifically the homeless populations, but how many of these panhandling tickets are being issued. So that will help us get a handle on that. If those communities have ordinances on their books, then presumably they see a problem somehow, or maybe they're trying to prevent something they think might be happening, but we tried to get a sampling of ordinances from different kinds of communities to actually try and get at the size and scope of this problem. So hopefully we'll have some more answers in the near future, but we just sent the records requests along with our letters on Tuesday.
Got it. So good. We're on top of this. 800-642-1234 is the number to call if you want to be part of this discussion. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Have you ever been deterred from going into a business because there is a panhandler out there? Are you somebody who has decided to carry cash and give yourself a budget every week to give to various people that you see on the street that are asking for money? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Mary Kay from Kenosha, welcome to the program.
Good morning. First of all, people shouldn't have to panhandle. They should have access to flyers that tell them where the nearest homeless shelter or food pantry is. There should be a Cars for Poor People program in each city so people can get to work. We should start building more houses because some of these apartments are overpriced and they're falling apart. We need to start building more houses that are affordable. And we should be hiring more Americans. I see that we're not hiring as many as us is we need to be hiring.
Thank you for that, Mary Kay. Karen, do you want to respond to that?
Again, I think there are, you know, lots of people out there seeking solutions. I don't want to get into a whole discussion about who should be hired or those kinds of issues.
Right,
I don't think this is that program. But I do think the ideas of giving people information about where to get food, about building more affordable housing, all those things, those are great, and those are the kinds of things I think Housing Not Handcuffs is talking about.
So, Chris, you're sending letters to these towns, but it seems to me that your aim is state policy. What would you like to see change on a state policy issue?
Well, there again, I guess I would defer to the real experts on this. But you know, our main focus, at least with this effort with the letters, is that we would like to see these unconstitutional ordinances taken off the books.
And those ordinances are generally local or municipal ordinances. There aren't really, as far as we know, state anti-panhandling ordinances. But the state could play a big role in housing and poverty policy solutions if it chose to do so.
We are talking about anti-panhandling ordinances. We have one more phone call. Jeff from Appleton, welcome to the program.
Hi there. There's a lot of things getting blurred here. Panhandling laws, it's not a war against poverty. It's documentation of people that are out panhandling, taking money from others, begging, and then going into the next parking lot and getting in their vehicle and driving home. It's well documented. I see the pictures a lot.
Karen, is that myth or is that true?
Our experience is that most of the people who are panhandling, seeking money, certainly most of the people who've been ticketed for it in certain communities are in fact poor. And regardless, the constitutional issue, the First Amendment issue, it says you can't ban panhandling.
So even if I have a really nice home and I drive a Mercedes, I can go to State Street right now and ask people for money.
Absolutely.
We have been talking about the unconstitutionality of panhandling laws. The ACLU just sent letters to 8 municipalities in Wisconsin. Chris Ott and Karen Rotker from the ACLU of Wisconsin, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The Walker administration is trying to position the state as a high-tech manufacturing home. But high-tech businesses need experienced workers. And the military just happens to be the training ground for a lot of tech workers. So the state is scouring the country, inviting veterans or soon-to-be veterans to make Wisconsin their home. Tina Brown is Deputy Secretary and Chief Operating Officer of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. She joins us to talk about this. Tina, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
We are also joined by Steve Yonke. He is the state field representative for the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs. He is one of Wisconsin's ambassadors at Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton in California this week, and he will be at most of the other transition events. Steve, welcome to the Morning Show.
Good morning.
So let's start with you, Tricia. What is the aim of this initiative and where did it come from?
Well, as you know, Wisconsin has a very low unemployment rate.
Yeah.
And with a high number of jobs because our businesses are doing well. I think on Friday we were measuring about 94,000 open positions on our jobcenterofwisconsin.com website. And so we need to go find more workers. And as many of our companies here in the state have already made a commitment to hiring vets, and the state has made a commitment to making Wisconsin a great place for vets, this is kind of a natural next step, is going out and connecting with these men and women that have served our country but now are transitioning out of the military into civilian life. And we want to show them the opportunities that we have here in the state for them.
How many people are we looking for?
Well, we have, I think the number is about 200,000 to 250,000 veterans that transition out of the military each year. And clearly some of them, are going to stay in the areas where they're at, maybe already connected to employers. But for those that are looking to move or looking for that right career opportunity or great quality of life, we think that Wisconsin offers them something special.
Steve, the purpose of going on the road, you have been in Camp Pendleton for the week?
Yes, yesterday was our first event. We had the day of travel and obviously logistically we got here and got all of our stuff. And then yesterday was our first event with our partner Hiring Our Heroes of the U.S. Chamber Foundation. And it went very well. We engaged with, it had to be well over 200 service members during the day's event. And then we did a networking reception with spouses in the evening, in which there were probably another 50 military families that showed up. So it was a good day for Wisconsin to get out there and talk about what we have to offer them. And we were very well received, in part because they didn't realize that there was a state doing this.
Yeah.
They were kind of shocked that we weren't selling a job. We were selling a way of life. We were selling an opportunity to work and be successful and have a career, but we were selling a great quality of life.
Okay, so
in Wisconsin.
So give me your pitch. Give me your pitch. What did you tell them?
All right. So the pitch is everyone in this room is offering you a job, and they're great jobs. We were set up next to Oshkosh Corp, which is a great Wisconsin business. And we said, you can work anywhere, but we want to tell you why you should live in Wisconsin. The career, the opportunity that you want to have, you can have it in Wisconsin. And you're going to make the most of the time that you don't spend working here in our state. And this is why. The 23 to 26 benefits that are nationally recognized by the Association of State Directors of VAs is what makes Wisconsin number one for veterans. Our commute times are lower. Our cost of living is lower. And it is truly a great place to raise a family, to have that life after service where you can continue to serve in your community or you cannot. But it's what makes Wisconsin great is those opportunities that you have.
We are talking about a program, a state program, to lure people who are veterans now or who are becoming veterans very soon to come to Wisconsin and continue their careers. And as you just heard Steve Yonke say, their lives. Veterans, did you return to Wisconsin after your service? And did you move to Wisconsin for the first time, maybe after the military? What was your experience like? Did you get a job? Did all the things that the pitch that Steve Yonke gave, is it true for you, or did you face some challenges? And employers, do you have jobs that are available that you need to fill with veterans who have experience, who have high-tech experience for the most part? 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Tricia, one of the things that interests me is what kinds of jobs are, you know, we're selling the state, that's great, but what kinds of jobs are people coming here for? What's the match with the military exactly?
You name it. I mean, the military provides training in essentially all facets of industry, including, you know, healthcare, even, you know, software development. You think about some of their coding experience that they've had, technical training for sure. And it truly aligns with our industries, which is why many of our companies, you know, seek and have a lot of resources committed towards recruiting and bringing veterans into their companies. One of the really cool things, I think, about this approach, and Steve can talk about this probably a little bit more because he is a veteran, so he understands the acronyms and the lingo better than I do. But as part of that job search, they can actually use their military occupation codes, enter those in, to help align with the jobs that are open in Wisconsin.
And Steve, you want to talk about that?
Absolutely. One of the great tools that we have developed in this collaborative partnership with the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, Wisconsin Economic Development, the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development, which that collaborative environment in the state of Wisconsin, the state agencies coming together, and the Department of Tourism, those agencies coming together and saying, we're going to work for a greater Wisconsin together, and breaking down those silos is one of the things that makes this initiative so great. And one of the things that has happened is DWD, the Department of Workforce Development, has developed a very good tool that we use on WISC Jobs for Vets, so WISC Jobs for Vets, in which you can put in your military occupational specialty, your MOS, or whatever your job coding was, mm-hmm. and then hit search, and the jobs that you would qualify for through the ONET site will come up in Wisconsin. So, like, it automatically funnels you to the Job Center of Wisconsin, but every single job that you're qualified for in the state that background lends you to shows up. I had a Marine yesterday that said, you won't find a single thing for mine. And I said, come on, devil, give me a try right here. And he goes, all right. So he says, I think it was 3561. And I was like, 3561? I'm not really familiar with what that is. And he said, it's logistics, supply management. And I was like, I know we have something. So put it in, hit search, over 600 jobs that you qualify for in the state of Wisconsin came up. And he goes, well, but are these like all entry-level jobs? I said, let's just scroll through the list. I said, Green Bay, Milwaukee, Racine, Nina, Eau Claire, Madison. I said, they're all over the great state. So let's look at the state. You tell me what lake you want to live next to.
That's a great way to put it. Give me that site again. I want to put that site up. Where did you look up this information?
Actually, if you go to inwisconsin.com/veterans, it has all of the information and then the link you directly to that site that Steve mentioned, with jobsforvets.com.
Okay, good. We will put that up on our Twitter page and also up on our website. We are talking right now about Jobs for Veterans, a Wisconsin initiative is going out to various military bases. And as you just heard Steve Yonke say, convincing people pretty well that they should move to Wisconsin for quality of life reasons and because there are a lot of jobs there that match with what they do in the military. We're taking your calls here, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Steve, you're going out and talking to people. How big is this this effort? How many of you are there that are going out all over the country?
Carrie, yesterday there were over 100 employers. But we are the only state in the country that is making this level of an effort. We are, once again, leading the nation in what we do for service members and spouses by engaging with them, not just about the career, but about the quality of life that they're going to have after service.
And the responses you're getting, I mean, this, you totally convinced this guy. I can only assume that he is going to be moving here. I'd kind of like to move because military people have been moved all over anyway. They don't necessarily have the roots. Or are you getting people who want to go home to where they're from?
Carrie, it's funny. We're getting some traffic from Illinois, lot of service members. Minnesota, finding out about Wisconsin. We're getting a large amount of curiosity about why we're here, because they've never seen that before, that we're not just selling jobs. We're selling the opportunity to live the best life that you can have, how Wisconsin is more you. So they're curious about that. But the one thing you have to remember is the United States military, the Department of Defense, will pay for one move.
Ah. So make it a good one. We'll talk about that a little more in a few minutes. We're talking with Tricia Brown and Steve Yonke. Both of them work for the state of Wisconsin, and they are the leaders, or the point people anyway, in an initiative to get veterans and soon-to-be veterans to move to our state. We'll be back in a moment. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. What do you think of asking veterans to come and live and work in Wisconsin when you go out of state? Do you tout how wonderful it is and how many lakes there are, as Steve Yonke just said, in Wisconsin? Are there enough jobs for them? And should we maybe be training people who already live here rather than asking people to come to our state? 800-642-1234. ideas@wpr.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Tricia Brown, I'm going to throw that question to you. There are a lot of people here. We just did a show yesterday on people who are not making enough to meet their basic needs. Are there job training programs in place for them also?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is part of a multifaceted effort. I think something to the tune of $340 million has been spent in the last two bienniums, and much of that going into training programs. So So yeah, it's a yes and all answer to that question.
Okay, so Steve, employers the employers were there at Camp Pendleton, and they are trying to talk people into coming in Wisconsin and working for them. What kinds of attributes are they specifically looking for in military people?
Okay, that's a great question. One of the reasons they want service members and their spouses to work for them is because they are a high-speed, low-drag piece of equipment, to borrow the military vernacular. I'm
okay.
Sorry, I spent all day on base yesterday. I might have reverted back a little bit.
Right, right. You're an acronym person. You're totally an acronym person. Yes.
Yes. And when you hire a veteran, let's look at it this way. If you take 100 people in the United States from the ages of 16 to 26, 24 of them out of that 100 qualify for military service, right? Out of that 24, only 3 of them are going in the service, are going to enlist or become an officer. So you're already getting the top 3% of the country. So the question isn't, why are you hiring a veteran? It's why aren't you hiring a veteran? You already know that the screen has been done, that they have showed a sense of commitment, and the things that they have learned in the military, that dedication, that work ethic, the communication skills, the leadership, the initiative, the mission accomplishment, all of those things make for a great worker. Even if it's an entry-level position all the way up to middle to upper management, military members and their spouses bring those intangibles that employers really want.
We are taking your calls about bringing veterans to Wisconsin and finding them jobs. Sean from Fond du Lac, welcome to the program. Sean, are you there?
Hello, yeah, sorry.
Hi, that's okay. So you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I was just commenting on the jobs in Wisconsin for veterans and how I visited that website and kind of looked around at it. And my main concern is, it's great to bring veterans into Wisconsin. I've been in Wisconsin on and off for since 2000. I'm not originally from Wisconsin, but, the biggest problem I have with that is that, not all veterans, whether they qualify due to MOS, it's not easy getting your foot in the door on these jobs because, like myself, I was infantry and I served 07, 08 for OEF and OIF in Iraq. And a lot of soldiers come home with these mental disabilities or PTSD is what we call it. And they go through a lot of issues readjusting back into civilization. A lot of them find themselves in and out of the legal system, which looks horrible on their record,
right.
And they're being turned down for jobs like, for instance, Oshkosh Truck, Pierce Manufacturing, Brenner Tank, all located in the Fox Valley area, and great companies. But, they see these things, and it's an immediate shutdown because you're not judging a person based off of military experience. You're judging them based off of life experience after coming home. And that's a big concern I have with that because I have a lot of friends that did go through these issues and unfortunately are homeless because the society itself doesn't know how to deal with these soldiers when they come home. So they're just kind of thrown to the wolves, basically, so to speak.
Sean, thank you for that. I'm going to start with you on that one, Steve. We are prepared to say, what lake do you want to live by? But are we prepared to say, these are the services that we can offer you for your PTSD or your physical disability that you got because you served?
Absolutely. We not only understand that this is the single largest decision that's a service member and spouse is making since the service member said at MEPS that I do solemnly swear. When they held up their right hand and took that oath to serve this country, now they're making the next biggest decision in their lives, and they need to know that they're supported. They need to understand that if they come to Wisconsin, it's not, hey, you're here, that's great. and we're gone. They need to understand that in Wisconsin, one of the things that makes us the best place in the country for veterans is not only the robust collaboration between state-level departments, but it is our county veteran service offices. It's a great group, one in all 72 counties in the state, plus the 11 tribal veteran service officers. Those are local advocates for that veteran and their needs, be it local government, state, or federal. They are a tireless advocate for that veteran and the things they need. The state of Wisconsin has 11 regional case managers, Veterans Outreach and Recovery Program, through the Department of Veterans Affairs, that case manage veterans at or before crisis to make sure that they don't get to that point that Sean talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And then in our state, we are blessed to be served by some of the great VA medical centers, like throughout the country. We have six: Tomah, Madison, Minneapolis, Iron Mountain, Milwaukee, and North Chicago. Plus, we have 18 community-based outreach clinics throughout the state. So your VA help, that medical base that you need, is never more than a phone call away.
Tricia, you're the economic development person here in Wisconsin. You work with the corporations, with the people who hire them, veterans. Are there any initiatives to kind of help bridge that gap between a veteran who comes home with PTSD, who struggles to reintegrate in the community, and then is maybe penalized for it, as Sean was saying, because they may get in trouble and then they're not hireable?
Yeah, one of the things that we have been working with the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Workforce Development on is this a kind of a training for businesses, developing it where many of them are veteran-friendly, but there's a difference between veteran-friendly and veteran-ready. And part of that is the companies need to know about these resources that Steve was just talking about, because there are many of them, but, you know, they're not always, they don't really know how to connect to them or how to connect their people or their potential employees that are veterans that may come with, you know, some of these experiences and traumatic issues that they are dealing with as they are in civilian life. And so that's part of this process and part of the awareness that we want to help build.
Steve, I want to end here. We have about 30 seconds left. When and where did you serve?
United States Marine Corps, 96 to 2000, Marine Corps Base, Hawaii. 1st Battalion, 12th Marines, 3rd Marine Regiment.
Tricia, did you ever serve?
I did not, but I am proud to work along those that did.
Thank you very much. Tricia Brown is Deputy Secretary and Chief Operating Officer of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. And Steve Yonke is the State Field Representative for the Wisconsin Department of Veteran Affairs. And as you heard, he is a former Marine. Both of you, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie.
I'm Carrie Kaufman, and it is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.